So today we're reading from Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 3, Text number 4 and 5. The chapter is entitled The Lord's Pastimes Out of Vrindavan. Text number 4, I guess 5 is on the board. Yep, I'll just read text 4. Translation: by subduing seven bulls whose noses were not pierced, the Lord achieved the hand of Princess Nagnajiti in the open competition to select her bridegroom. Although the Lord was victorious, his competitors asked the hand of the princess, and thus there was a fight. Well equipped with weapons, the Lord killed or wounded all of them, but he was not hurt. But he was not hurt himself. Text number 5. Translation: just to please his dear wife, the Lord brought back the Parijata tree from heaven, just as an ordinary husband would do. But Indra, the king of heaven, induced by his wives, henpecked as he was, ran after the Lord with full force to fight him. Purport: the Lord once went to the heavenly planet to present an earring to Aditi, the mother of the demigods, and his wife Satyabhama also went with him. There is a special flowering tree called the Parijata, which grows only in the heavenly planets, and Satyabhama wanted this tree. Just to please his wife, like an ordinary husband, the Lord brought back the tree, and this enraged Vajri, or the controller of the thunderbolt. Indra's wives inspired him to run after the Lord to fight, and Indra, because he was a henpecked husband and also a fool, listened to them and dared to fight with Krishna. He was a fool on this occasion because he forgot that everything belongs to the Lord. There was no fault on the part of the Lord, even though he took away the tree from the heavenly kingdom. But because Indra was henpecked, dominated by his beautiful wives like Shachi, he became a fool, just as all persons who are dominated by their wives are generally foolish. Indra thought that Krishna was a henpecked husband who only by the will of his wife Satyabhama took away the property of heaven, and therefore he thought that Krishna could be punished. He forgot that the Lord is the proprietor of everything and cannot be henpecked. The Lord is fully independent, and by his will only he can have hundreds and thousands of wives like Satyabhama. He was not therefore attached to Satyabhama because she was a beautiful wife, but he was pleased with her devotional service and thus wanted to reciprocate the unalloyed devotion of his devotee. Verse again. Priyam prabhu gramya iva priyaya vidit sur achad yutarum yadate vajyadravatam saganaur shandaha krida mrigonu namayam vadhunam. Just to please his dear wife, the Lord brought back the Parijata tree from heaven, just as an ordinary husband would do. But Indra, the king of heaven, induced by his wives, henpecked as he was, ran after the Lord with full force to fight him. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So these are very interesting verses. Uddhava is speaking and now he's talking about Krishna's pastimes. So this is only the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, but already we're hearing about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and now outside of Vrindavan also. So we can see what the purpose of Bhagavatam is. We're still early on in the Bhagavatam and it's a long way to go before we get to the 10th canto, but we're already being given a teaser, a little bit of a taste of who Krishna is, and it's quite intimate. I know we have a Be a Monk challenge this week, and generally we try to explain things in a more accessible way when we have these Beer Monk Challenge sessions. But this is very difficult to explain in a very simple way, because it's all about Krishna and his personality and his personal activities. And especially in this verse, for one who's not so experienced in devotional service, it's very difficult to understand what is the difference between what Krishna is doing and what Indra is doing. So, just to give a little bit of a background as to what's happening in this verse, for those who don't know the pastime, that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, himself, was living in Dwarka, not living in Vrindavan, but he's living in Dwarka, and he has his queens there. And one of his queens, Satyabhama, who is an expansion of Srimati Radharani, she has a similar mood to her, she's kind of fiery, then she goes up with Krishna to the heavenly planets. So they're living on the earth planet, but they go up to the heavenly planets because Krishna has to visit one of the demigods there. And Satyabhama sees this tree, which only exists in the heavenly planets. It's called the Parijata tree, and it's very heavenly aroma spreads everywhere. And she says, I'd like that. I think Krishna had bought a flower for one of his other wives, right? Who is it? For Rukmini. So he'd bought a flower for Rukmini. So in the feminine way, Satyabhama thought, if Rukmini has a flower, I want the whole tree. So she asked Krishna to bring the whole tree, and Krishna says, interesting how it says in the verse, just to please his dear wife, the Lord brought back the Parijata tree from heaven, just as an ordinary husband would do. I haven't seen many ordinary husbands uprooting trees and carrying them home for their wives, but I guess the mood is the same, that if your wife would like a pair of shoes or something, then we try to fulfill their desires. But Krishna took the Parijata tree, and Indra saw this and became very angry, inspired by his wives, and attacked Krishna and tried to fight with Krishna. So that's the background, that's the story. And for one who is not very well educated in Krishna consciousness, you would think, well, what's the difference? In here we have the Sanskrit word kridamriga for henpecked. Kridamriga. So who's henpecked? Krishna's henpecked? Or Indra's henpecked? Or everybody's henpecked? How do you tell the difference? And to be honest, how would you know? If Prabhupada wasn't explaining it to us, then ostensibly it looks like Satyabhama said to Krishna, take the Parijata tree down, which isn't actually allowed. It's not allowed to leave the heavenly kingdom. And Krishna, because he's under pressure, then, and he has to please his wife, otherwise he'll get in trouble, then he takes the Parijata tree. But it's explained that Indra was henpecked, Prabhupada says, and he's a fool, just as many people are who are I don't see it right now. Oh, just as all persons who are dominated by their wives are generally foolish. It was Indra who was the fool. But how would one know that? How would you know that Krishna is not motivated? It has to be explained. It has to be realized. One requires purification to understand these things. Because it looks like that. we'll get into that in a little bit later. But now let's look at Krishna's motivation. So if Krishna wasn't henpecked, if Krishna wasn't just thinking, oh my God, my wife wants this now, then, you know, I better get it. And I know I'm going to get in trouble, but anyway, what can I do? I'm stuck. If that wasn't Krishna's motivation, then what was his motivation? His motivation was that he was pleased with the devotional service of Satyabhama, who happened to be his wife, who served him in that Madhurya Ras, in the Swakya Ras, who served him as a wife. And he reciprocates that. Yayatamam papadyante tamstataiva bhajamiyaham. So if Krishna is served by his devotee, he reciprocates, or at least he tries to reciprocate. Usually he can reciprocate fully. That's just what he does. It's just natural. Like the law of karma. If I give somebody £50, then that £50 will come back to me at another time, or more, depending on who I give it to. So it's the same with Krishna. You give to Krishna, and Krishna gives back to you. So he's reciprocating with Satyabhama. And it wasn't based upon his material attachment. So that's a difficult thing to perceive, because it seems like that. It seems like Krishna acts like that. So, for instance, in Vrindavan, then Krishna has his relationship with his gopis. So on the altar here, we have Krishna playing the flute, and next to him we have Srimati Radharani. So she's a gopi, she's a cowherd girl in Vrindavan, and she's Krishna's consort. So there are also other consorts of Krishna, like Lalita, Vishakha, so many others. And Krishna interacts with them, Krishna dances with them, and it looks like Krishna is having a relationship, just like men and women have a relationship in this material world, just like boys and girls have a relationship. That's what it looks like. I mean, if you look at a picture, then that's what it looks like. Like, looks, Krishna's got his wife, or Krishna's got his girlfriend. And it seems like that in his interactions as well. They do the same things. They joke, they laugh, they eat together, they dance, they kiss, all of these different things. So what is the difference between Krishna doing that and what everybody else does in the material world? Well, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he explains that the difference between lust and love, or the difference between prema and karma, is that this love is totally selfless. So the gopis are serving Krishna because they love him and they'll do anything for his satisfaction. And Krishna is serving the gopis because he's reciprocating with how they approach him. So in this material world, it's totally different. It's like the opposite. In the Bhagavad Gita, it explains how there's a banyan tree of this material world, and it's a reflection of the original tree in the spiritual world, and everything that's high and exalted in the spiritual world is low in this material world, just like this relationship between man and woman, this sexual attraction. So in this material world, it's degraded, it's contaminating, it's actually sinful if it's not done according to religious principles. But it's the highest thing in the spiritual world. It's called the adirasa. So in the spiritual world, it's the highest thing, but it's totally pure and it's totally uncontaminated. And the reason it's totally uncontaminated is because it's not based on selfish desire. In this material world, that's all it's based upon, is enjoying my body, enjoying somebody else's body. In the spiritual world, it's all about how can I serve somebody else and how can I reciprocate that service. So Krishna's motivation was selfless, and it wasn't induced by any kind of attachment either. So in this world, we become attached to something due to ignorance. Dhyayato vishyam pumsa sangashte shubhajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho bijayate. That when we look at a sense object, when we look at something that's attractive, let's say we see a Ferrari, a red Ferrari, we think, I like that, it looks cool, it looks cooler than my beat up old car, I'd like to have one of those. And you look at it, you contemplate it, and you begin to desire it. And when you begin to desire it, then you become attached to it. And then it goes on further from there, you get into more trouble after that. So we become attached to things out of ignorance, based on false ego, based on illusion. We don't know who we are, we don't know what our relationship is with God, so we're just like blown around in this material world by the material energy, and we get stuck to different things. And that's called material attachment. But Krishna never becomes attached to anything. He's not dependent upon anything. Krishna is totally independent. Swayam Bhagavan, he's Swarat, he's independent. So he doesn't depend upon anything. In this material world, sometimes when there's a man and a wife, and one of them dies, after they've been married a long time, then the other person also dies within a few months. I was just at my mother's house for Christmas, and my mother was adopted, but who she was adopted by, they're a very religious family. Like, her grandfather was a vicar, And he had seven brothers. They were all vicars, every single one. And they had two sisters, and they both, one of them married a vicar, and one of them married a church warden. So extremely religious family. But her, my great-grandfather, he had a son, and he went to the Second World War, and he died in the Second World War. And 3 months after his son died, then he also died, his father. He was just so heartbroken, he just couldn't live anymore without him. So when we're attached to something out of ignorance, because we don't know that we should be attached to Krishna, then we become dependent upon that thing. It's like leaning against a brick wall. You're leaning against that wall. Somebody knocks the wall down, you're going to fall down as well. So people become attached, just like Indra was attached to his wives. They told him, you have to do this, so he did it. And it got him into trouble. Krishna's not acting out of attachment, he's reciprocating the pure love of his devotees, in this case of Satyabhama. So it does look very similar, but the motivation is very different. Just like the example of a book distributor, I think Prabhupada gives this example, that everybody is selling something in the material world. Everybody wants to sell you something. That's why Facebook exists. So they can gather your data and they can sell things to you. Everybody wants to sell you things. You're not a product, but you're like a buying capacity in this world. And people want your money. They want you to work and they want your money after you've worked. So everyone's selling something in this material world. We're all buying so many things, goods and services that we require. And you have so many salesmen. You have so many shops. You have so many products that people are selling. People are selling books out there. So many bookshops still. Despite all of our advancement in technology, books haven't become obsolete. And then you have water stones. You have these chuggers on the street as well. We still have a few of them around, not as many as there used to be. These charity muggers who are on the street stopping people, trying to get people to sign up. And then we have our book distributors standing on the street. They may be in trousers. They may not even have tilak on. They may be using a board, or they may be doing straight books, standing on the same street, same height as the other person, same number of arms and legs, dealing with money, right? They're not dealing with something else, not saying, yes, just give me some love in exchange for the book, right? We want the money. Give us money. Give us as much as possible. I'll give you a few extra books. So they're doing the same thing, ostensibly. They're standing on the street, they're selling books, they're stopping people, they're marketing, they're making it attractive, they're describing the benefits of the book, they're relating to that person, looking them in the eyes, you know, being cordial. Using all the same strategies that a salesman would use, but is this a material activity? No, it's totally transcendental. This is the Sangatan Yagya for this age. This is not even just the Sangatan Yagya, this is the Brihat Madanga. So much power in distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. Srila Prabhupada came to this material world primarily to write his books. And we're his little servants, you know, representing him, giving out his books to the conditioned souls. What a powerful activity. We can't understand. My spiritual master was saying the other day in a class, nobody gets to do this service of distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. It's so rare, this opportunity. In the spiritual world, they can't distribute Prabhupada's books. They can't preach in the spiritual world. So we're here in this material world due to our sinful activities. But now we have the opportunity to engage in activities that even the demigods are envious of, that one cannot even perform in the spiritual world. We can serve a Nitya Siddha, an eternal associate of Krishna, by handing out his books and bringing others closer to Krishna consciousness. So there's a gulf of difference between a book distributor and somebody standing in Waterstones selling so many other types of books. But to the uneducated, they don't see any difference. They don't understand that there's any difference whatsoever, but it's totally the opposite, actually. And there's also many other instances of this, like Vritrasura in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The story of Vritrasura is, I'll just briefly describe the story because it's quite amazing, that Chitraketu Maharaj, he was a devotee, and he had Is it 10 billion wives? I think it was 10 billion wives he had. But he didn't have any children. And he desperately wanted a child, as many of the kings wanted at that time, to have, you know, progeny so they could pass on the kingdom to them. But he didn't have a child, so he was very upset. And Narada Muni came along one time and he saw that Chitrakirti Maharaj was very upset. And he said, okay, I'll arrange it for you to have a son. And he will be called, what was his name? Harshashoka, yeah. He will be called Harshashoka, which means happiness and distress. So he was blessed with that son, and then Narada Muni left. But because Chitrakirti Maharaj had so many other wives, they became envious because the mother of that son became the dearest to Chitrakirti Maharaj. So they actually conspired and they poisoned his son, and his son died. So Chitrakirti Maharaj was just broken. He was a broken man, can you imagine? Tried so hard, and he got a son finally, and then he left. So that's the Harshashoka. He was so happy that he got his son, and he was so unhappy that he lost him. This is the nature of attachment. So Narada Muni came back, and he said, you don't look very happy. What's the problem? He said, my son has died. And he said, okay, look, I'll bring your son back for you. So he brought back the soul of the son of Chitrakirti Maharaj, and Chitrakirti Maharaj was so happy, my son, you're here. You've come back to me. And his son said, who are you? He said, I'm your father. He said, which one? I've had so many millions of fathers in this material world. I've had so many mothers, so many fathers, so many brothers. I've been a father, I've been a child, I've been a brother, I've been an animal, I've been a tree. Which one are you talking about? You know, there've been quite a lot. Can you be a bit more specific? And Chitrakirti Maharaj could understand, and he became enlightened by this encounter and by the mercy of Narada Muni. And then he became a great devotee, and he just traveled around the universe. It's a lot to take in for these BM monk candidates, aren't there, in Krishna consciousness? So many intergalactic aspects of Krishna consciousness. So Chitrakirti, he just traveled around the universe after that. And as a self-realized soul, one time he came upon Lord Shiva and Parvati. Lord Shiva was giving a Bhagavatam class like this. The only difference was his wife was sitting on his lap while he was giving the class. So Chitrakirti Maharaj had a little bit of a giggle when he saw that. And Parvati didn't take it so lightly, however, and she cursed him to become a demon. So he became a demon immediately, like literally looking like a monster, and his name was Vritrasura. So Vritrasura, he was a demon, we could say, externally, but internally he was a pure devotee. And he was on the side of the demons, and they fought against the demigods. So he was fighting against Indra, who is mentioned here in this verse as well, the king of heaven, who was trying to stop Krishna taking away the Parijata tree. And when they were fighting on the battlefield, Vritrasura was espousing all of this transcendental philosophy, and he was criticizing Indra. He was saying, come and kill me, don't be afraid, you know, don't give up. I know I'm eternal, and it doesn't even matter if you destroy me. Anyway, you're going to destroy me. I know you're going to defeat me, but it's okay. I'm going to go back to Krishna. Indra was afraid, and he was bewildered by, how is this demon that I'm fighting? How is he a pure devotee? So this pastime is there to show us that we have to become educated in Krishna consciousness. We have to have knowledge to see the world in the correct way. It's called Shastra Chakshu, that we see the world through the eyes of scripture, because this world is such a big illusion. It's such an illusion. Just the situation that we're in, even just now as devotees, it's such an illusion that we're in this material body and we're not this body. It's just so bewildering. You look in the mirror, everything is designed for you to forget Krishna and to think that you're something separate than Krishna. Where is Krishna in this world? You don't see Krishna, right? In Goloka Vrindavan, there's Krishna skipping around, playing. Everyone's talking about him. In this material world, you look in the news, are they talking about Krishna? Nobody's talking about Krishna. Everyone's trying to forget him. Everything is designed for us to forget Krishna. And just the way it's built, this whole material world and our material bodies, So to Shishirada Gokulana Naki Jai. To remember him is such an effort that we have to be very, very well educated. And my spiritual master says that it's a huge effort. It takes a huge amount of time and energy to learn this. We invest so much time and energy to maintain these bodies, right? We go through education for like 20 years, and then we work our whole life, all day, every day. We need to invest that time in Krishna consciousness. We need to dedicate our time and our energy to hearing about Krishna, to learning Bhagavad Gita, to reading Srimad Bhagavatam, reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, performing whatever service we can to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Because not only by reading do we get this knowledge, but by mercy also, by the mercy of Krishna. When Krishna is pleased by our service, then he reveals this knowledge within our heart. So it's extremely important to educate ourselves in this, and we're very happy that you've joined us for the Be a Monk Challenge, because you're intelligent enough to perceive that this is of value, this is important. I'm going to dedicate some time to this, as opposed to just trying to improve my material situation. So, it is difficult to understand Krishna's position as being different than ours, or just understanding that devotional service is different than material activities. And Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrita mudhoyam nabijanati lokomam ajam avyayam. He says, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know me. Therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. So Krishna, he doesn't make it easy to know him. Just like we have one acharya in our line, one great spiritual teacher, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who's up there on the top right-hand corner. So he was a great devotee. He was also a Nitya Siddha. But when he was coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, he was hearing about Krishna, he was reading Srimad Bhagavatam, he was hearing how Krishna is dancing with other people's wives in the dead of night. And he thought, this is bad. This is bad. You know, why do people worship Krishna? This is totally immoral. You know, we should be morally upstanding people, and who would do such a thing? He couldn't understand that this is something that should be condoned or worshipped or meditated upon or accepted. But when he came in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is up here in the middle, Lord Chaitanya, and then he saw the character of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a celibate. He was extremely strict. He was engaged in meditation and chanting and study and giving of spiritual knowledge to the general masses of people. He could relate to Lord Chaitanya as being someone to emulate, as someone to follow and to believe in. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was worshipping Krishna and explaining who Krishna is and how Krishna works. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur could understand. And it's very relevant to us, because we don't, obviously we worship Krishna, but we don't follow the activities of Krishna exactly, right? We don't follow Krishna's pastimes, the activities of Krishna's pastime. It's not a sadhana, it's not a spiritual practice for us that we, I don't know, go out in the middle of the night and practice dancing or something, you know, or we don't like take the cows out and pretend that we're with Krishna or anything like that. That's not our sadhana. There are groups that do that. It's a misunderstanding that, you know, that's Krishna's pastimes. I'm going to, you know, get in with the party. But that's not how to get Krishna's mercy. Just like when we worship the deities of Radha and Krishna, then we do so in the mood of Lakshmi and Narayan. Because we don't have the qualification to serve them spontaneously, immediately. We don't just like, you know, cook a samosa in the kitchen and bring it out and, you know, feed it to Krishna. It's a whole process, offerings at particular times, according to rules and regulations. It's not about how you feel spontaneously. It's the opposite of that. It's about how it's regulated and doing it in that way. So we serve Krishna through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that is the way to understand Krishna correctly. The way to understand Krishna is through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as shown by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And there's an important verse in that connection also that I'll have to just bring up. Arajyo Bhagavan Rajesha Tanayasta Dharma Vrindavanam Ramya Kachid Upasana Vrajava Duvar Gena Yakalpita Srima Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Prema Pumato Mahan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matamidam Tatra Dara Naparaha. The translation is, Nandanandana Sri Krishna is the topmost object of worship, and his abode of Vrindavan is equally worshipable. The young married brides of Vrindavan, the Vrajagopis, showed the best way to worship Sri Krishna. The most authoritative source of divine revelation is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna Prema, pure love of God, is the fifth and ultimate goal of life. And this is the essence of the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we consider this doctrine to be supreme. That's from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I believe. So that's explaining that this is the essence of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying? He's saying that the worship of the gopis is the highest form of worship. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining that. He's establishing that. So even if we don't know it, we hear it from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and we accept it in that way. Otherwise it can be very confusing. But we should also understand that everything that Krishna does is perfect and never becomes contaminated. That can also be confusing, because what does Krishna do? He does lots of naughty things. He steals things. He gets in trouble. He breaks things. And devotees worship that. Like, we have a whole month in Krishna consciousness where we worship Krishna, who's a naughty boy, breaking a pot of yogurt, making a big mess, feeding it to the monkeys in his house, and then he gets punished and he gets tied up. So for us, it's a whole month, a special month. For other people, they must think we're nuts. You know, like, how could you understand that? It's just way beyond anything. Like, Krishna consciousness, it's the real PhD level of God understanding. It's just way, way beyond. I was in Watford the other day. My car was failing its MOT. And I was chanting japa, and I went to the church in Watford. You know where often the Harinam is? I went inside the church. I'd never been inside it before. Very beautiful, very nice. I was chanting japa in there and spoke to the church warden. I had some interesting things in there, actually, some interesting quotes from Jesus. And but where is the conception of God? What does he look like, you know? What does he do? It's not there. And but this Krishna consciousness is not just like one step beyond that. You could say one step beyond that would be maybe Vishnu, worshipping Vishnu, understanding Vishnu. It's quite clear he's God, he's all powerful, he's like in that position. But we're like dealing with Krishna, who's all over the place, you know? He's like stealing, getting in trouble, got his girlfriends, you know, confusing people, taking parijata trees from the heaven, covering himself with his own energy so people don't understand him. In the material world, when he's at the end of his pastimes, he even leaves a material body to totally bewilder people. So they even have evidence to say, actually, Krishna is just a normal person. It's like, unless you're grounded in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then Krishna's activities are extremely bewildering. So we need to hear and chant and dedicate serious time and energy, invest serious time and energy into Krishna consciousness. It's not something you're going to get as a hobby. Yeah, I'll do it once a week. I'll go to my Krishna club on a Wednesday evening instead of jujitsu, and I'm going to get it. And you're not going to get it. It's going to take a lot of time and purification. Probably this life now that we're engaging in Krishna consciousness is not the first. We probably, been doing Krishna consciousness part time for a few lives before this. Now we have the opportunity to realize, okay, this is a serious thing, and I need to dedicate some serious time and energy. Because it's only by that education, that commitment, that dedication, that Krishna will see, oh, you want to know me? Okay, then I'll help you to know me. If I'm saying to Krishna, you know, I've got this, I've got my wife, I've got my job, I've got, you know, I want to do some traveling, I've got this much I want to save up, you know, I'm quite interested in whatever it may be, and this, and also interested in Krishna consciousness, and this, then Krishna's like, okay, then I'll give you, you know, this little sliver of the pie chart that you're dedicating to me, I'll give you a tiny little taster. But if we understand that this is actually, Krishna is everything. Krishna says, I am the butter and the fire in the offering, you know, I am the demigods. I am that telephone that you want. It's just a external material manifestation of my energy. You know, if you think an iPhone 14 is attractive, imagine what it is to see Krishna. He is the origin. So if we understand that actually he is the source of all of these things, then just as the gopis, they give up everything for Krishna. They don't have anything. At least Satyabhama and Rukmini, they have a palace. They have a few servants. They have a little bit of security. Gopis, what do they have? Nothing. They just go to Krishna, put everything at risk for him, just for his pleasure. Living in a very strict society. So if we can, as said in that verse, the gopis, that's the highest form of worship. We also dedicate our time and our effort, just as they do, to Krishna's service, then Krishna will reciprocate fully, and we will actually get a glimpse into who Krishna is and who we are as well. Otherwise, we're just going to be stuck in this conception that I'm this material body, I'm white, English, or whatever it may be, and we'll be far from understanding who we actually are. Okay, thank you for your attention. Does anybody have any comments or questions or corrections? Yeah.
Hare. So in this past time, the desire of Satyabhama, it's not spiritual, but it's not sinful as well. Right? So
it's spiritual. She's a pure devotee. She's a...
No, but the desire to get a tree, a parijat tree, it's not spiritual, right? It's nonsense.
Antaranga's feeling fired up about this. Go ahead.
Any devotee, if he desires something, she just made a masquerade that, oh, I want this tree, but why she wanted a tree? So she can actually make like garlands and offerings to Krishna. He said, this tree is amazing, produced such a beautiful flowers. I wish to offer it to Krishna. So even if a devotee makes a facade, oh, I want these jewels, or I want this, I want that, ultimately pure devotee means that they don't want anything for themselves. It is said that there are three items in the spiritual world which give all the desires. Kamadenu cows, Chintamani stones, and the Kalpa Riksha trees. So what devotees want? They want just fruits and flowers from the trees. They just want milk from the cows. And they just use, gopis use the stones to put it in these ankle bells, so they just make sounds. So devotees don't want anything. And even they don't want their service to be taken away. So they just utilize the things like they're not even fulfilling desires. They just utilize the natural attributes of that particular object. So when Satyabhama wanted the tree, she wanted to make garlands for Krishna and decorate Krishna. So it's a completely different tattva. It's not material.
Although it's true, she's a Nitya Siddha, she's an associate of Krishna, but it's also explained that there is a tinge of selfishness in the love of the queens of Krishna as compared to the gopis in Vrindavan. There's something there that Krishna is my husband. There's some aspect of, I don't know the details of expectation, but yeah, but in that's a very fine thing in general. And you don't know, like, in Vrindavan also, the inhabitants of Vrindavan say the gopis, they get angry with Krishna. And they're feeling the anger, right? Radharani's shouting at Krishna. But she's actually doing it for his pleasure. They're doing everything for Krishna's pleasure. It's not that she's... it's not based on any selfishness. For us, I think it's inconceivable. You can't understand it because it sounds like it's kind of a play act. But it's not. Just like Krishna is Mugdata, when he's being chased by Mother Yashoda, it's not like, oh, this is fun, I'm pretending to be a little boy. He's afraid. So when the inhabitants of Vrindavan are doing different things that may appear selfish, like the gopas are wrestling with Krishna and they want to win, right? They're competing with each other. They're doing it for Krishna's pleasure, but it's like a natural, it's a total natural thing. I'm doing this for Krishna's pleasure. For us, it seems strange because everything is based around our own enjoyment. Did you want to say something else?
No, means so Prithi's comment answered my question, sir.
Okay, thank you. Somebody else? Yep.
Hare Krishna. Could you help me understand what service is?
What service is? Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam. So it begins with hearing about Krishna. So reading Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing classes about Krishna. That is the primary form of devotional service. And then chanting Krishna's names. And then there's so many other things you can also engage in. There's so much service you can do here at the temple. You can speak to authorities here and say, I have this amount of time. I have this skill set. I want to engage it in Krishna's service. You can also donate to the temple. It's about engaging everything in Krishna's service. But the primary is hearing and chanting about Krishna. Hearing from pure devotees about Krishna, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and chanting Krishna's holy names. Okay, yes, Parama Karunapu, you had something? And then we'll finish.
Hare Krishna, so it's interesting, at least for me, that Indra has more than one wife. Generally, we hear only of Sachi Devi. Mm-hmm. And also, I was just quickly looking and I couldn't find anywhere that Indra has more than one wife. Sometimes Sachi is named differently. She has many names. So I don't know if you did any further research.
I've never heard it, but yeah, it's mentioned here. I mean, it would be, in one sense, it would be surprising if he didn't have more than one wife. Because even on this planet, right, even the average Muslim chap in Saudi Arabia has got a couple of dozen. So my spiritual master was mentioning there was one king in India, and it was only a few hundred years ago. Do you remember that? He was saying he had like five, how many was it? Was it 10,000 wives? So it was like a crazy, I think it was even more than Krishna had, like even more than 16,000. It was 20,000 or something. It's like, so if Indra is the king of heaven and he's only got one, that's quite impressive. But yeah, I haven't heard before that he has more than one. And we don't hear like, we hear about all the major demigods, right? Lord Brahma. Who else do we hear? They have their consorts. Yeah, Shiva. We only generally hear that they've got one. Maybe it's that's the main one. I don't know. I don't know any more details, I'm afraid, Puri.
Connected with that. Just before this, obviously, there was the whole Govardhan Leela, and Indra then begs for forgiveness and with Surabhi cow. So it's just interesting how that he knows who Krishna is, but then he still goes through, you know, this event.
Seems like he forgets, yeah, he becomes covered by the material energy. What did it says in the purport here then? Indra thought that Krishna was a henpecked husband who only by the will of his wife Satyabhama took away the property of heaven, and therefore he thought that Krishna could be punished. He forgot that the Lord is the proprietor of everything and cannot be henpecked. He becomes covered and he forgets, which is unbelievable. Because, you know, like, imagine we had a temple president here, the Mana, and occasionally they forget that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know. They'd get kicked out. And say, you know, we have a Prime Minister of England and occasionally they forget that, you know, what country they're the ruler of. You would think that the King of Heaven would remember who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, wouldn't you? I mean, I would definitely put that in the service description. But it seems like quite regularly he forgets. I mean, I don't know if at all that aspect is there, that Krishna arranges that. I don't know. I haven't heard that before. I've heard that, yeah, being a demigod is quite risky business. It's not as great as they make it out to be. In other religions, you know, it's like you go back to heaven, you get this, you get that, but you could also get eaten by a demon, you know, and get recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam as being a fool. So yeah, Prabhupada said that most of his disciples will go back to the heavenly planets because they're not practicing, like, you know, Ekeha Kuru Nandana, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, Yajeta Purusham Param. You're not giving everything, you know, you have to give everything. That doesn't mean that everybody should be a brahmachari. Prabhupada was a grihastha for so long, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, 12 children. But in our heart, you know, and as much time and energy we can dedicate, then otherwise we probably all have been Indras, we probably all made these mistakes. What to speak of, you know, the crazy sinful activities we've performed in the material world. But there's different types of demigods, like there's Sakama Bhaktas, devotees with material desires, and then there's pure devotees like Shiva and Yamaraj. So there's devotees, different categories of devotees. I don't think Indra is like the highest category of Vaishnava, although he's there in the Briha Bhagavatamrita. They go to see Indra, he's definitely there amongst great devotees, but he makes his mistakes. So it's a slippery, path. We should get out of here as quickly as we can. No stopping off on the heavenly planet on the way. You may end up coming back here after having a little sojourn in the Nandanandana gardens. Okay, thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.